ladies and gentlemen, recording from Los Angeles, California. Welcome to another edition of the one and only podcast known to the world as dun, 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 dun. Stop, where Sean Teplitsky gives his unique opinion on the biggest news stories in sports.
That's right, ladies and germs. This is yet another episode of the greatest podcast in the world, the one and only Sean Sports Stop podcast, where your boy covers all the biggest news in sports and gives his unique, captivating, passionate opinion on everything going on. May is the kind of month in sports where it's one of the best sports months of the year. I would say only October, maybe March could rival May, but in May you have the NBA playoffs, the NHL playoffs, the MLB season is in full swing, the NFL offseason. It goes on and on and on. So it is peak sports time right now, and it is amazing. And as always, there's a lot to talk about, and let's get right into it, starting with the NBA, because why not? The Kia All-NBA teams have been announced, and a pair of two-time NBA MVPs lead the way once again. Unsurprisingly, Denver Nuggets center and reigning back-to-back MVP Nikola Jokic finds himself on the first team alongside Milwaukee Bucks forward Giannis Antetokounmpo, who won the MVP award in 2019 and 2020. They are joined by newcomer and Phoenix Suns shooting guard Devin Booker, who averaged a career-high 27 points while leading his team to an NBA-best 64-18 record. They were, though, eliminated in the second round, very surprisingly, by the Dallas Mavericks in seven games, led by Luka Doncic. Speaking of Luka Doncic, he is in the backcourt for his third straight first-team appearance as well. Finally, Boston Celtics forward Jason Tatum rounds out the first team this year after getting the Celtics to second in the Eastern Conference. He was the catalyst for the team's 26-6 finish down the stretch and averaged a career-high 27 points and 8 rebounds. Here's a look at the second team. You got Jump at point guard, at guards, you got Ja Morant and Steph Curry. Forwards, you got DeMar DeRozan and Kevin Durant, joined by the center in Joel Embiid. And the third team, it's Trae Young, Chris Paul at the guard positions, Pascal Siakam and LeBron James at the forward positions, and Karl Anthony Towns is the All-NBA third team center. Now, Jason Tatum brought up a very interesting point in that Joel Embiid, many people thought, should have been the MVP. I've said multiple times I have thought that Nikola Jokic edged it out, but I definitely see why many people would give it to Embiid. With that said, Jason Tatum brought up a very good and interesting point in that how did Joel Embiid finish second in MVP voting and not make the first team? Well, the issue is the guy who did win MVP, Nikola Jokic, is also a center. So since the All-NBA teams follow positions, they go position by position, you can't have Joel Embiid and Nikola Jokic both on the first team. Although, obviously, skill-wise, Joel Embiid belongs on that first team as much as anyone else. But, unfortunately, he's a center just like Jokic is, so he's on the second team. Jason Tatum brought up the point that perhaps the NBA should consider making the All-NBA teams positionless. A very interesting point. The reigning back-to-back MVP Nikola Jokic posted 27 points, 14 rebounds, and 8 assists per game. Those are video game-like numbers from the Serbian. Per Basketball Reference, he paced the league with 15.2 win shares and a 9.8 VORP. For those that don't know, VORP means value over replacement players. His 32.8 player efficiency also led the NBA. I mean, the Denver Nuggets were statistically the worst team in the NBA without Nikola Jokic. That tells you everything you need to know. Of course, the same arguments can be made for Philadelphia and Milwaukee. You take Joel Embiid off the Sixers and Giannis Antetokounmpo off the Milwaukee Bucks, and those teams are nowhere near the heights that they reached this season. Jokic also did all that despite Denver missing point guard Jamal Murray, who's a huge piece of their team, with a torn ACL all season, and forward Michael Porter Jr., who is a very, very important role player on that Nuggets team when he's healthy. I mean, he's shown so far to be rather injury-prone. He had lumbar spine surgery, which is not a good sign, especially at his young age. So those are your All-NBA teams. I don't really have much to say against them other than the fact that Joel Embiid absolutely cannot finish second place in MVP voting and simultaneously not make the first team. But of course, it makes sense because of the positions. transitioning to some more basketball. This, however, is a much more serious topic. Cheryl Griner, the wife of Brittany Griner, urged President Joe Biden to become more involved in the efforts to release the Phoenix Mercury star from her detainment in Russia. Quote, there is one person that can go get her, and that's our president, Griner said during an interview with ABC's Good Morning America on Wednesday. He has that power. You know, I'm just like, why are we not using it? Like, urgently use it. We're expecting him to use his power to get it done. International relations with Russia have obviously deteriorated during the country's invasion of Ukraine, which began around the same time as Griner's detainment in late February. Vopal noted Russian authorities said Griner's luggage at a Moscow airport contained vape cartridges with a hashish oil, and she could face a 10-year prison sentence, although the Biden administration has declared her as wrongfully detained. They aren't really doing much else, though. I've talked about this very unfortunate situation on this show. Honestly, I don't want to get too political, but I'm not sure that Joe Biden, as the president of the United States, does have that power to get Brittany Griner back. I mean, the U.S. as a whole, potentially, but I'll be honest. I think if Donald Trump was in office, he would have a much, much easier chance. I mean, just look at how easily he got LiAngelo Ball and the other UCLA players out of China in 2017 when they were being held in China after stealing sunglasses. So my point is, it's a very, very unfortunate situation, all things considered, and I hope that Brittany Griner comes home as soon as humanly possible. I really hope she does. Switching gears to soccer, AC Milan announced that Zlatan Ibrahimovic underwent surgery on his left knee to address an ACL injury on Wednesday. The Swedish striker's recovery is set to take around 7 to 8 months. World Football Insider Fabrizio Romano noted Ibrahimovic's current contract expires this summer and that he's unsure on whether he will keep playing or not. The news comes only 3 days after Milan won their first Italian league championship since 2010. Zlatan is credited with playing a huge role in that success. He had 8 goals and 2 assists in 23 Serie A appearances, and his 0.71 goals per 90 minutes were the highest on the team. No surprise there. The 40-year-old also provided invaluable leadership to a club that had been lost in the wilderness. After placing third in 2012, Milan would go 8 seasons before qualifying for the Champions League again. Even before he underwent knee surgery, Zlatan's age raised obvious questions about his status for the 2022-23 season and beyond. In an interview with ESPN in early May, shortly before he suffered the injury, he acknowledged that the end might be near. Now, with this fairly I wouldn't say crazy major, but definitely significant injury, I mean, he might be on a faster track to retirement. I hope not. I hope Zlatan can keep playing, but the reality of the situation, he's 40 years old. He's going through a very major, significant injury now, and it's unfortunate. I mean, Father Time is undefeated, even against Zlatan, even against the Lion, who doesn't compare himself to humans. Father Time is still undefeated, and hopefully we can see him keep playing. With that, we're switching gears back to the NBA. Luka Doncic still believes history is on the table for the Dallas Mavericks, saying, quote, I mean, I still believe we can win, you know, he said following Tuesday's 119-109 victory over the Golden State Warriors in Game 4 of the Western Conference Finals, per ESPN. Swept or not swept, in the end, if you lose, you lose. It don't matter how many we win. We have to go game by game. We're going to believe until the end. That is the best possible mentality you could have in a situation like this. Everyone knows that no team in NBA history has ever come back from a 3-0 series deficit, but we do know that multiple teams on multiple occasions have came back from 3-1 down. Most famously, the Golden State Warriors choked a 3-1 lead in the 2016 NBA Finals against the Cleveland Cavaliers that will never be forgotten. But 3-1 leads have been blown several times, I would even say many times in sports and in the NBA. And that's where the Dallas Mavericks currently find themselves. That's the position they find themselves in. So now they're down 3-1. If they can win today, then all of a sudden it's a completely new series. It's anybody's series with all the momentum belonging to the Dallas Mavericks, with then Game 6 being in Dallas. And then if they win that, a potential win or go home Game 7 of the Western Conference Finals. We're still a long way from that point, but 3-1 is vastly different from 3-0. And I'm not ruling it out. I've seen crazier things happen. I can't rule it out. Yes, it's never happened before. There was actually a guy who put $50,000 on the Mavs to win the series a few minutes before Game 4. He got very nice odds on that. As he has throughout the postseason, Doncic led the way in the latest victory with 30 points, 14 rebounds, 9 assists, 2 steals, and 2 blocks. Yet it was far from a one-man show as 6 Mavs finished in double figures, including Dorian Finney-Smith, who had 23 points and 6 rebounds, and Jalen Brunson, who had a very complete game with 15 points, 5 assists, and 5 rebounds. Dallas was largely in control during the game, although Golden State made one final run to cut the deficit to single digits in the fourth quarter. Yet even a return to the game for Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, and Andrew Wiggins was not enough for the visitors to complete the comeback and sweep. And Luka's dunk, with just more than 3 minutes left, pushed the advantage to double digits for good. Even with the win, overcoming what is now a 3-1 deficit against a championship-tested Warriors core with 2 of the next 3 games. Next up, we're going to switch gears to some football. The Pittsburgh Steelers are expected to hire Omar Khan as their next general manager to replace Kevin Colbert, who has retired after leading the team's football operations since the year 2000. What a career he's had. Adam Schefter reported the news on Tuesday. In addition, the Steelers are expected to hire Philadelphia Eagles vice president of player personnel Andy Weidel as their assistant GM, per CBS Sports Network. Khan will just be the 5th football operations leader in franchise history since 1971. Usually with trends like that, the less total number of head coaches and GMs, front office members, a team has in their history, the more successful they've been, because long tenured coaches and GMs are tenured for long times because their teams are massively successful. The Steelers are an example of one of those teams. I mean, five football operations managers since 1971 is unprecedented. There's been little turnover in leadership positions within the organization, as the team has only had 3 coaches. They've had 3 coaches since Chuck Knoll was hired in 1969. That is absolutely absurd. Some teams in the NFL have 3 coaches in 3 seasons. That is just insane. The Steelers definitely hope that Khan continues the tradition of stability and excellence in Pittsburgh as the team looks for their 7th Super Bowl championship. However, Khan will have a tall task ahead of him, with the team now searching for a long-term answer at the quarterback position after the retirement of Big Ben Roethlisberger. The Steelers do have a clear-cut top pair of options on the roster in Mitch Trubisky, who signed a 2-year deal with the Steelers this offseason, as well as rookie Kenny Pickett, who went 20th overall in the 2022 NFL draft out of Pitt. The good news is the Steelers have talent to surround their quarterbacks. A lot of teams don't have that kind of luxury. The game's best defensive player, edge rusher TJ Watt, is coming off a 22.5 sack season, while defensive lineman Cameron Hayward excelled yet again with 10 sacks himself. On offense, wideout Deontay Johnson snagged 107 passes, and running back Najee Harris led the team with 1,667 yards from scrimmage and 10 touchdowns. Can't forget about Chase Claypool. He's a huge, huge piece of the Steelers' offense as well. So I think they'll be fine. The Steelers are one of those organizations where they're always successful, they're always winning. Doesn't matter who their quarterback is. They've had 3 head coaches since 1969. Again, that's not a coincidence. That is not a coincidence. And let's switch gears back to some basketball now. The NBA is as much of a sport and a exhibition of basketball as it is a soap opera. There's always drama, there's always storylines, and the fans eat that up and love it just as much as the game itself. And I'm one of those fans. I mean, I would think that most fans like the drama when it comes to trades, personalities, free agency, and all that. Kevin Durant is a prime example. His teammate Kyrie Irving, or perhaps former teammate, more on that later, might be a different story. Brooklyn Nets star Kevin Durant has not spoken with the team's front office since being swept in the first round of the 2022 NBA playoffs, according to the New York Daily News. Man, I bet that KD wishes he signed with the Knicks instead of the Nets. But anyway, this comes against the backdrop of Kyrie Irving potentially hitting free agency. More on him later. But Irving can opt out of his 4-year contract worth $136.5 million. I mean, how much money does the guy need? But I guess it makes sense to opt out. The Nets' last game was on April 25th. After such a disappointing outcome, Brooklyn was swept by the Boston Celtics. It's natural for all of the key parties to take time off to decompress. I mean, getting swept when you were the favorite to win the NBA championship and you get swept in the first round with a team that has Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving, a team that had James Harden and traded him for Ben Simmons, who didn't play the whole series. I mean, we know all about Ben Simmons, but this was such a disaster for the Brooklyn Nets. This whole season was such a disaster, a complete mess. A star player going a month without speaking with team officials. does not seem like a tremendous cause for concern on his face, because after all, it is the off season. All these guys have lives outside of basketball. I don't think it's the biggest of deals, but it is something. In the case of the Nets, however, Irving presents a major conundrum, and general manager Sean Marks will want some input from KD before making a final decision. Now, I'm pretty sure KD will always be in favor of having Kyrie around. It was reported the team is, quote, outright unwilling to give Irving a long-term extension because of his injury history and decision not to get vaccinated against COVID-19. If Irving feels alienated by that stance and decides to leave for greener pastures, it could have consequences for the franchise. In layman's terms, if Irving leaves the Nets, it wouldn't be a surprise if Durant becomes frustrated with the organization's ability to put championship pieces around him. They failed to do so at the beginning of last season, with none of their top offseason acquisitions, James Johnson, DeAndre Bembry, or Javon Carter, finishing the year in Brooklyn. And again, we know how the James Harden scenario went. This was one of the downsides to signing KD and Kyrie as part of a package deal. They come together. I mean, you can't alienate one and expect the other to be all fine and dandy. While nobody could have foreseen the exact circumstances of Brooklyn's current predicament, it is still now their responsibility to deal with the consequences. Kyrie has battled through injuries throughout his career and grown discontented at his previous two stops. The gamble backfiring on the Nets is an outcome that seemed predictable from the moment Kyrie signed. KD has already signed a four-year deal, an extension worth $194.2 million with the 2022-23 season. But that begins with the 2022-23 season, but that might prove little in the way of security. Should the Nets fail to resolve the Irving situation to his satisfaction, it stands to reason that the 12-time All-Star might begin to question his future with the Brooklyn Nets. So very, very interesting. I'll be reporting the news on that as it becomes available. Now we're going to switch gears to NFL. Back to football, ladies and gentlemen. A judge dismissed the NFL's motion to dismiss, excuse me, wow, that's really what it says. My apologies. A judge dismissed the NFL's motion to dismiss a lawsuit filed by former Las Vegas Raiders head coach John Gruden, according to The Athletic. Tayshon Reed of The Athletic noted the case could now go to discovery and speculated the NFL might want to head that off by reaching a settlement. Gruden resigned from his post last October after emails surfaced in which he used anti-gay, racist, and misogynistic language in correspondence. The emails were unearthed as the NFL investigated the workplace culture of the Washington Commanders. In November, Gruden filed suit against the NFL and Commissioner Roger Goodell and alleged he was the victim of a, quote, malicious and orchestrated campaign. NFL spokesperson Brian McCarthy responded to say the, quote, allegations are entirely meritless and the NFL will vigorously defend against these claims. The league filed its motion to dismiss the suit in January and also tried to get the case moved into arbitration. The lawsuit's connection to the Commanders' investigation might open the door for significantly damaging information to be made public in discovery. This is a very, very bad situation for the NFL. Following the investigation, Washington received a $10 million fine, and Tanya Snyder assumed day-to-day duties running the organization from her husband. The NFL declined to supply the full findings of the investigation, though obviously that would put them in a terrible light, with Beth Wilkinson sharing a verbal summary to league officials. Through the Gruden lawsuit, some of those findings could presumably come to light if the discovery phase proceeds. So this is a absolute nightmare scenario for the NFL. They're going to try to make sure that no info goes public, nothing damages their public view, their view in the public eye, their image. They're going to do everything they can to have this swept under the rug. We are transitioning back to the NBA. This Eastern Conference Final Series and the NBA playoffs as a whole have been very strange, to say the least. The Miami Heat shot only 31.9% from the floor and made 7 out of 45 threes. That is so bad. That I could have shot that way. I swear, people like to say that, and it's usually nonsense, but I could have shot 7 of 45. I swear to you, I could have done that. Anyway, the Celtics won 93-80. It was a very bad game to watch. I mean, it was a 42-37 game at halftime. I don't remember the last time I saw an NBA game with a halftime score like that, let alone a game in the Eastern Conference Finals. I mean, there have been so many blowouts in these playoffs. It's I saw a report saying that it's the least competitive playoffs since 2004. I mean, it really, there's like no drama, no late game drama. It's all blowouts, whether it's one team or the other. So the Heat had a 42-37 lead at halftime, but the Celtics doubled the Heat's point total in the third quarter, 32-16. I mean, that's so low scoring, and led by as many as 23 points. Celtics wing Jaylen Brown had 25. He led all scorers. while teammate Jason Tatum posted a near triple-double with 22 points, 12 rebounds, and 9 assists. Heat guard Kyle Lowry and Max Strus missed all 15 of their shots. Jimmy Butler shot 4 of 18. Victor Oladipo made 1 out of his 7 field goal attempts. It was so bad that Victor Oladipo shot a 3. He shot a 3. He missed terribly. The ball got batted around. It went back to Oladipo in the exact same spot. And the commentator, literally, Mike Breen, said, way off again. After the first miss, he said, way off. Oladipo, way off. Second miss, Oladipo, way off again. I don't think I've ever heard Mike Breen say the three words, way off again, ever. That's how much of a shit show this game was. I'm really hoping that game 6 in Boston will be better, but I'm not holding my breath because our sample size at this point is too large to cast this off as some kind of what's the term? What's the fucking term I'm looking for? Like a random chance alone. But anyway, it was a complete disaster for the Heat, who now trail 3-2 in the best of 7 series. It was just a terrible performance. It was a historically bad shooting performance from the Miami Heat. And yeah, with that, we're going to transition to some playoff hockey. This playoff hockey is unmatched. It's unmatched. It really is unmatched. It's so fun to watch. It's an amazing sport. If you don't watch hockey, I suggest you tune into playoff hockey at the very least. Nathan MacKinnon had himself an incredible Wednesday night. His teammates, not so much. The Colorado Avalanche blew 2 separate leads, wasted MacKinnon's hat trick, which means he scored 3 goals alone, and threw away a chance to end their second round series against the St. Louis Blues, losing game 5 at home in overtime 5-4. I mean, this is just embarrassing. If you're the Avalanche, you're a super team. The Blues are a good team, but they are not a super team by any means. You're at home. You have not made the conference finals since 2002. You have a perfect opportunity to do so. Nathan MacKinnon has the game of his life. I mean, the third goal he scored to give the Avalanche a late 4-3 lead was one of the greatest goals I have ever seen. And I've been watching hockey for many years now, religiously. It was an unbelievable goal. What a sad performance from the Avalanche. I mean, I bet on the Blues to win live, so I was very happy with how the game ended. Tyler Bozak was the man of the hour for the Blues, scoring the game-winning goal in the overtime period. I mean, the Avalanche, it's inexcusable. You have a 3-0 lead. You're the best team in the NHL. You have Nathan MacKinnon. You have so much talent on your team. You're at home. You have a 3-1 series lead. You're up 3-0. The Blues score 3 goals in like 10 minutes, if that. The Avalanche on MacKinnon's insane goal take a late 4-3 lead. Celebrations for like 5 minutes. Hats are being thrown by fans onto the ice. Everyone thinks it's over. I turn to my friend and I go, watch the Blues tie it now. Sure enough, couple of minutes later, if that, with an empty net, meaning the Blues sent their goalie to the bench so that they could get an extra attacker. But obviously, you know, they didn't have a goalie manning the net, and the Blues tied it at 4 and eventually won a few minutes into overtime to spoil the celebrations for the Avalanche. All of a sudden, it's a 3-2 series lead with game 6 being played in St. Louis, who, you know, you can't favor the Blues over the Avalanche in game 6, but they are at home. They are championship tested. They've been here before. So if they win game 6, all of a sudden you have a game 7 in Colorado. And as we know, game 7, the two best words in sports, anything can happen. So, wow. I mean, I was shocked. Every indication showed that the Avalanche had it in the bag. And don't get me wrong, I still think the Avalanche will win this series. But man, this is the kind of loss that makes or breaks a team. If you're the Colorado Avalanche, this defines you. This loss, in my opinion, defines you. It's such a choke. It's such a massive loss. But again, it makes you or it breaks you. I think in game 6, either the Avalanche completely blow the Blues out of the water or the Blues win a close game and force a 7th game back in Denver. What a series this has been. The NHL playoffs have been completely off the charts. So if you haven't been enjoying the NBA playoffs, I highly, highly suggest you to watch the NHL playoffs. Hockey playoffs are unbelievable. Switching gears to poker now, or a bet. I don't even know what this is. We'll talk about this. Some kind of poker betting scheme. Let's look into it. Professional poker player Corey Ziedman has been arrested and indicted on federal charges of conspiracy to commit wire fraud and mail fraud, as well as conspiracy to commit money laundering. A federal indictment from the United States District Court for the Eastern District of New York was released Wednesday per ESPN. It alleges that Zeidman and unnamed co-conspirators took in more than $25 million over a period of 16 years from people who believe that the poker player led an organization that held privileged that had privileged inside information on fixed games for sports betting purposes. Per the U.S., as part of the scheme, Zeidman and his co-conspirators placed misleading radio ads in various U.S. markets, claiming to have a sophisticated white-collar approach to gathering sports information. When listeners contacted the service, which used names like Gordon Howard Global and Ray Palmer Group, they were told the organization had privileged information about fixed games that it received from physicians at colleges and television executives, according to the indictment. Callers were asked to pay a fee for access to the information, of course. However, Zeidman and his co-conspirators allegedly did not have any inside information. Quote, in reality, he was selling nothing but lies and misinformation, bilking millions from victims along the way, leaving their lives in financial ruin and their bank accounts empty. Homeland Security Investigations, New York Acting Special Agent in Charge, Ricky J. Patel, said in a statement. Now, this might be an unpopular opinion, but if he didn't lie about having inside information and if he didn't lie, I mean, I guess I'm just trying to see. I feel like he didn't commit all these crimes that he's being charged with. Maybe I'm just retarded, but he was selling, like, yeah, I guess he scammed people, but where does the wire fraud and money laundering come in? And this might be it. Zeidman and his co-conspirators are allegedly opened bank accounts from 2013 to 20, quote, in the names of shell corporations for the purpose of receiving proceeds of the fraud scheme. Well, yeah, okay, there's where the crime is. That my question was answered very, very quickly. Zeidman, 61 years old, won a bracelet at the 2012 World Series of Poker. He has $690,000 in recorded earnings per card player. Hopefully those earnings will help him avoid jail time somehow. I suspect that that's not the case. With that, we are going to switch gears to baseball. What a stupid story this is. I can't believe that it's still being talked. I can't believe that it's still getting talked about. New York Yankees third baseman Josh Donaldson has issued a statement about the racist remarks he directed towards Chicago White Sox shortstop Tim Anderson. Racist, even though that... So here's what happened. Josh Donaldson called Tim Anderson Jackie in a sarcastic way, mocking him because Tim Anderson has called himself Jackie Robinson on numerous occasions. And if we're being honest, Tim Anderson can't shine Jackie Robinson's shoes. So when there's two players talking shit at each other, two grown men, mind you, and Josh Donaldson sarcastically calls Tim Anderson Jackie, that if you have more than half a brain, it is immediately clear that there is no kind of racial implication or racism being displayed. Of course, though, it was completely interpreted the wrong way, and Donaldson was forced to apologize. Now, I'm not saying that Josh Donaldson is not a grade-A asshole. He most definitely is. But this is not one of those instances, in my opinion. It's just not, in my opinion. In the statement, Donaldson said he apologized to Anderson over the weekend, and his personal, quote, view of that exchange hasn't changed, and I absolutely meant no disrespect. I mean, I'm glad that he's still sticking up for himself despite issuing an apology. That's probably the best thing he could do. Donaldson also issued an apology to Jackie Robinson's widow, Rachel, and Robinson's family. Quote, for any distress this incident may have caused. Very classy as well. So Donaldson called Anderson Jackie, as I said, on the field during the first inning of a game between the White Sox and Yankees on May 21st. The two exchanged words on the field. In the fifth inning, Donaldson and White Sox catcher Yasmani Grandal had a verbal exchange that led to both benches clearing. After the game, Anderson told reporters that Donaldson, quote, made a disrespectful comment. Grandal said his reaction was sparked by what the Yankees third baseman said. Quote, the game went through a period of time where a lot of those comments were made, and I think we're way past that, Grandal told reporters. It's just unacceptable. I just thought it was a low blow, and I want to make sure I got my teams back. There's no way you're allowed to say something like that. I totally see Yasmani Grandal's point of view. However, that logic only applies if there were actual racial undertones and motivations on behalf of Josh Donaldson, which it doesn't seem like there were, at least for me. Transitioning to more football. If you thought Colin Kaepernick was just going to stay silent, you thought wrong. Colin Kaepernick, quote, impressed Las Vegas Raiders officials during his workout with the team, according to NFL Network. Ian Rappaport added that, quote, the door is open, seemingly alluding to an increased chance of Kaepernick signing a contract with the Raiders. This was the 34-year-old's first workout for an NFL team since 2017. Kaepernick, if you somehow don't know, has been out of the league since the conclusion of the 2016 season. That year, he began protesting by kneeling during the national anthem to raise awareness of police brutality and racial inequality. I cannot believe that it has been 6 years since this started. I remember talking about Kaepernick then. I remember talking about him in 2018 when I first started this podcast. The fact that it has been 6 years since Colin Kaepernick started kneeling during the national anthem is just blowing the head off my shoulders. I cannot believe how fast time flies. But anyway, many thought the NFL and its owners retaliated against Kaepernick for his activism and froze him out. In 2019, he and former 49ers teammate Eric Reid settled grievances with the NFL after alleging the league and owners had colluded to blackball them. And I'm not saying that they did collude to blackball him, but at the same time, there's absolutely no way that all 32 starting quarterbacks in the NFL are or were better than Colin Kaepernick. It's just absolutely not the case. It's just not. Michigan football coach Jim Harbaugh, who coached Kaepernick in San Francisco, named the veteran QB an honorary captain for the Wolverine spring game in April. While attending the event, Kaepernick told WXYZ Detroit that he was prepared to work his way back to a starting role if he landed with an NFL team again. Derek Carr is firmly entrenched as the guy in Las Vegas, signing a three-year deal worth $121.5 million. The quarterback situation behind Carr is a little less assured for the Raiders. You have Nick Mullins, who went 20 of 30 for 147 yards and one touchdown in his only start with the Cleveland Browns in 2020. Jarrett Stidham threw for 270 yards, two touchdowns, and four interceptions in his 2 years with the New England Patriots. So there is absolutely no way that Colin Kaepernick is – there's just no way that he is worse than those two gentlemen, respectfully. Transitioning to the NBA. We got some baseball, we got some basketball and baseball to close out this glorious episode of the Sean Sports Podcast. I really appreciate all you guys listening. It really means the world to me. And let's get back into it. Golden State Warriors, Golden State Warriors star Otto Porter Jr. will not play in Thursday night's Game 5 against the Dallas Mavericks because of a foot injury. Chris Haynes of Yahoo Sports previously reported Porter, who also missed Golden State's 10-point loss to the Mavericks in Game 4, was not expected to play on Thursday. The Warriors originally announced midway through Game 3 the 28-year-old was battling left foot soreness after having been limited to 6 minutes and 49 seconds on the court. Subsequent x-rays on his foot were negative. Leading up to Game 5, which tips off in about an hour and a half, it is currently 4:30 p.m. Pacific time here in beautiful Los Angeles, California. Leading up to Game 5, the team listed Porter as questionable. The 6'8" veteran has been a dependable role player for the Warriors. He averaged 8 points and 6 rebounds and shot 37% from three in the season. His numbers have gone down slightly in the postseason as he's averaging 5.5 points and 4 rebounds per game, but that's to be expected since coach Steve Kerr is leaning on his starters a little more than, you know, when it's not the playoffs. It makes perfect sense. Transitioning to more basketball. Hopefully this guy can transition back to basketball. The New Orleans Pelicans announced today that star Zion Williamson, quote, has been cleared in his return to play progression without any restrictions. That is awesome news. I'm a big fan of Zion Williamson, not a fan of the Pelicans, but I love Zion. The team said a checkup on his right foot, quote, showed continued improvement. That is great news. Williamson underwent foot surgery before the 2021-2 season tipped off and missed the entire year. Thanks in part to the shot in the arm they got from acquiring CJ McCollum ahead of the trade deadline, the Pelicans advanced to the playoffs and pushed the Phoenix Suns to 6 games in the first round. Still, nobody questions Zion's value to the Pelicans and what he represents for the franchise. It has only been a question of will he play and can he stay healthy. Through 85 career games, he's averaging 26 points, 7 rebounds, and over 3 assists per game. The foot injury, however, added to the concerns, again, about whether the 21-year-old can hold up enough to be the centerpiece that the Pelicans need. A meniscus tear sidelined him as a rookie and forced the team to diligently monitor his workload in 2020-21. Williamson is also eligible for an extension this summer ahead of the final year on his rookie contract, leaving the front office with a conundrum. The 2020-21 All-Star said in April he, quote, couldn't sign it fast enough if presented with an offer from the Pelicans, but his foot and meniscus injuries are likely to linger throughout negotiations. For New Orleans, giving him a fully guaranteed max contract might be too risky considering his injury history, while Zion will understandably want as much long-term security as possible. So it is a conundrum for the Pelicans, but I think if you're the Pelicans, you absolutely make sure you keep Zion Williamson because if you guys remember, Joel Embiid was, you know, missing season after season before he blossomed into what he is today. And yes, he still gets injured quite often, but I'm sure the Philadelphia 76ers do not regret paying Joel Embiid what they did and, you know, giving him the chance to showcase himself. And I think Zion will do the same with the Pelicans. Switching gears to baseball to close out this episode of the Sean Sports Talk podcast. Again, I really appreciate you guys listening. The New York Yankees media announced today that infielder Matt Carpenter has signed a major league contract with the team and has been added to the 26-man roster. New York placed Josh Donaldson, Joey Gallo, and Kyle Higashioka on the COVID-19 injured list earlier this week. The Yankees placed Stanton on the 10-day IL Wednesday because of ankle inflammation, and Gallo was reinstated. This will mark Carpenter's first appearance in the big leagues in 2022. He signed a minor league deal with the Texas Rangers in March and accepted an assignment with their AAA affiliate at the end of spring training. In 21 games with the Round Rock Express, Carpenter hit 275, 379, 613 with 6 homers and 19 RBIs. He was released by the Rangers on May 19th in a mutual decision caused by a lack of opportunity with the MLB team. Carpenter played for the St. Louis Cardinals from 2011 through 2021, making 3 All-Star games. He had a cup of coffee for the 2011 World Series champions with 19 plate appearances and became a staple in the team's lineup by the end of the 2012 season. His best season was in 2013 when he led Major League Baseball with 126 runs scored, 199 hits, and 55 doubles. He had a .318 batting average, a .873 OPS, with 11 home runs and 78 RBIs. And the former TCU star also made the All-Star game in 2014 and 2016 and paced the National League with 44 doubles in 2015. His .897 OPS in 2018 marked a career best. Carpenter's bat then began to decline in 2019 as injuries took their toll. He went on the injured list with a lower back strain and a right foot contusion, finishing the year hitting .226. The pandemic-shortened 2020 season ended with his batting average sinking below the Mendoza line all the way down to .186, bottoming out at .169 with a .581 OPS in 2021, so absolutely terrible. Carpenter had a vesting option for $18.5 million in 2022 if he reached 1,100 plate appearances in the previous two seasons, but he fell short and became a free agent. Carpenter appeared in 6 postseasons and was a great Cardinals player who should find himself in the team's Hall of Fame someday. But the Yankees now need depth because of Stanton's injury and the other players who are unavailable while on the COVID-19 injured list. Carpenter may not return to the peak levels that he had with the Cardinals, but his stint in AAA with Texas was productive, and it's an encouraging sign that he could be a solid role player for the New York Yankees. And as a fan of the Bronx Bombers after the Los Angeles Dodgers, I am very glad. I like this signing a lot. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you guys so much for listening. If you or someone you know has a small or medium-sized company that needs managed IT services, head over to crimsonit.com and tell them that you found them from the Sean Sports Talk podcast. They'll give you a great deal on whatever it is you're looking for. With that said, follow @LennysPicks on Instagram for the best sports picks in the world. And with that, I'm out.